It's a Friday, and that means we have the chance to visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. This is brought to you by Henderson and Watercutty. See their services at STLcriminaldefense.com. No matter how big the offense, no matter how small, they can help you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, STLcriminaldefense.com. Ben, always good to visit with you. How are things?
There are some Chiefs players who might need to call Henderson Watercutty after some of the...
Wild parade?
They stole from the Blues, right? We got to call them out. They got down off their floats and walked around. That has to be the way it's done. I mean, when people saw how awesome the Blues parade was with that interaction, I think I don't know that the Chiefs said, "Hey, we're going to do that because of the Blues," but that is the way to do a parade. But yeah, a lot of beer drinking in public, a lot of shotgunning. Travis Kelce, I think, is probably still drunk. So you know, if you have a night that gets out of control, a little too crazy, you know the guys to call.
STLcriminaldefense.com. They probably should have been there, and they would have had plenty of clients. I remember talking about that with Al MacInnis about the parade. And I saw him probably 2 weeks afterwards, and from my time with doing the Blues, I've gotten to know Al very well, and I just said, you know, what'd you take away from this great run and all that stuff? And he said, man, the parade. He said, that is now the gold standard of how parades should be done with a city and with their fans. And he said it was so spontaneous with our players. He said, I thought it was awesome. It was the best parade I've ever been to.
It was fun to watch Pietrangelo get, you know, because he was up on the Budweiser wagon, and like he had his triplets. He didn't know that he was riding the wagon. He was trying to figure out what to do. And he's eventually just said, forget it. And he just gets down. He was barely on the thing, and everybody, I think, kind of followed his lead. So, yeah, cool moment. Happy for Kansas City. I had a hard time kind of going full Chiefs bandwagon just because of the way that Clark Hunt voted. It's hard to forget that. I know he's since said he didn't want the Rams to leave, but hard to not be happy for Andy Reid. Hard to not be happy for Pat Mahomes. Hard to not be happy for a guy like Spags. You know, Steve Spagnuolo, who's now a two-time Super Bowl champion as a defensive coordinator. Didn't work out for him here with the Rams, but nice to see him bounce back.
I want to get into baseball. We got Steve Carlton, Keith Hernandez, Tommy Herr, Matt Morris, Edgar Renteria, Lee Smith, John Tudor as selected by the Red Ribbon Committee. Out of those seven, fans will vote two into the Cardinals Hall of Fame, and they'll be inducted in August. Give me your impressions of that group.
I think what has to happen is it's time for Keith Hernandez to get in, and then after that, take your pick. And there are a lot of good candidates there, but Keith Hernandez needs to be in. If you're going to have a Cardinals Hall of Fame, Keith Hernandez needs to be in it. Whether you want to look at things like, did he win a World Series? Yes. Look at his wins above replacement, easily the tops on the list during those guys' times with the Cardinals. You want to look at his OPS. I mean, I did this enough, looked up a stat for this when the finalists came out. Keith Hernandez, his OPS during the chunk of that, you know, seven-season chunk with the Cardinals when he was playing every day, it was top 15 in the game among guys who had, like, more than 3,000 at-bats during those seven seasons. You look at first baseman, top three. And, you know, one of the other guys is a Hall of Famer in Cooperstown. This is a player who was a key figure for a Cardinals team that went on to win a World Series, a beloved Cardinals team. I know it didn't end the best. They had to trade him. There was a lot of stuff going on with Keith Hernandez, with baseball at that time, and he's talked a lot about that. But to look back and say, man, it's time to honor that guy for what he meant to that team, what he meant to Cardinals fans, I think it's crazy that he's not in already. So get him in, and after that, I mean, you can make a case for a lot of different guys. I like Matt Morris. I think he's underrepresented as a horse for that Cardinals rotation for a long time, but Keith Hernandez has to get in.
Yeah, this is what's great. It's a debate, and the Cardinals, you know, they love the debate that goes along with it, and that's what makes this fun. I had the chance going over to 101 ESPN, and for folks that don't know, I've signed on with them officially to do some coverage of baseball, and David Freese popped in, and I was remiss. I wanted to ask him about this because I brought it up a lot on the air, and I don't know if he'll ever make that committee, you know, to get to that point, but he does fit the criteria to be a Cardinals Hall of Famer. I got to wonder if David Freese is going to go in there one day. But to the ultimate point of what I was trying to say here with you is that it brings up debate, it brings up research, and that's, I think, a good thing.
Absolutely. And it really, I don't get fired up about it too much because it's for the fans and it gives them a voice. You know, they put Mark McGwire in and they decided to do that. They get the vote, so they did it. Good for them. I necessarily don't agree with Mark McGwire being in. We can debate that all day. But again, it's for the fans, but man, there are a lot of folks out there who remember Keith Hernandez, what he did for this team, what he did for that World Series team, what he did for that run, and how can you not think that he's a Cardinals Hall of Famer. So I think it'll happen. I think it was really close last year. I think this is the time.
I also think that when you look at Keith Hernandez, you cannot overlook what he meant defensively. And some believe he's the best defensive first baseman ever. Not just really good, ever. Like, he's the gold standard.
What do you have, like, I forget how many consecutive gold gloves it was. I think six. I mean, it was remarkable. And then also the bat. Now, not the staggering home run totals that you see now, but, I mean, his on-base percentage was damn near 400. You know, this guy was an all-around player on a team that did all the things well. I mean, people laugh at me, but, you know, I kind of compare this current Cardinals team to as close to that version of Whitey Ball that we've seen. Now, no one's going to look like Whitey Ball in 2020. The guys get paid to hit home runs, and the game has changed. The ball, you know, the actual baseball has changed since then. But in terms of playing good defense, running the bases well, being aggressive on the base pads, you know, this team has some of those elements, and they both have really good first basemen, too.
Absolutely. So you like potentially Matt Morris. I think he's been out of the spotlight so much that that hurts him, but he is deserving for sure. And the other guy that I think there's two that really come to mind for me out of this group that I think will get a lot of attention. One is John Tudor, because of, if you look at the body of work that he had for a 3-4 year period, it's unbelievable. It's some of the best pitching that the Cardinals have ever had. And then the other one is Tommy Herr, who was kind of the glue in some ways that kept everything going with those great teams. You had Willie, you had Ozzie, you had Pendleton, you had Jack Clark, you had Tudor, but in the middle of it all was Tommy Herr. And that's something that I think doesn't get its recognition, and maybe it will now in August.
Long run with the Cardinals, too, certainly has a lot of people who view him as a fan favorite still. In some ways, kind of similar to, but a younger generation, Edgar Renteria. I mean, I can remember being a young guy in Sedalia, Missouri, watching Cardinals baseball, and you know, Edgar Renteria was a dude. So I think there are a lot of, if it skews younger, I think you could see him get more votes than I think some people think. So again, to me, it's Keith Hernandez, and then it's a really fascinating conversation in the group after that.
But to the bigger point, and we'll wrap it up about the Hall of Fame with this, it's the Cardinals Hall of Fame. And I think some people are saying, well, you can't put some of these guys in because they don't have Hall of Fame numbers. Exactly. But they may have the heartstrings pulled on a certain fan that wants to vote and see him in. Yep. And that's the part of this that makes it fun.
And this also goes the other way, where it's not just that you could, because you were a Hall of Famer in Cooperstown, means you get into the Cardinals Hall of Fame. I mean, Lee Smith. Now, you can, there's no doubt about it that Lee Smith is a Cooperstown Hall of Famer. And a lot of people say, well, how could he not be in the Cardinals Hall of Fame if he was a Hall of Famer? Well, was he a key player for the Cardinals? Totally. I mean, he was their shutdown lockout closer. But he also, most of his career was with the Cubs. His best statistics, you know, were with the Cubs. So I don't have a problem saying, hey, that guy's a Hall of Famer, but not necessarily a Cardinals Hall of Famer.
Let's continue with the Cardinal conversation. Two quick points I want to get into. Nolan Arenado. So he's still with the Colorado Rockies. This time next week, the Cardinals are on the field in Jupiter and getting ready, pitchers and catchers, and a lot of the guys are already there. What do you think happens with that? And in terms of where the Cardinals are with that, what do you think happens?
Well, I think all eyes are going to be on Arizona to see kind of what the next chapter of the Nolan Arenado saga is, and we don't know how that's going to play out. Now, usually when a star player comes out and criticizes the general manager publicly, it doesn't bode well for the long-term future. That doesn't necessarily mean that it can't be smoothed over. Nolan Arenado's a pro. The Rockies could, you know, make some sort of an apology, or, you know, they could try to smooth that out. The other thing that I think is probably more likely to happen is both sides kind of go to their corner and the Rockies figure out if they can compete this year. A lot of things go away when the team wins, and a lot of things bubble up when the team doesn't play well.
Absolutely.
So if the Rockies come out on a tear and they're, you know, they're looking like they're going to compete to be in the postseason, then I bet this calms down. If they don't and they look like the team that everybody was disappointed in last year, then I think you'll hear this Nolan Arenado trade speculation continue to be a big topic, you know, before the trade deadline. But spring training, when the Rockies get to Arizona, the comments he makes there, the comments that are made from the front office there, they will be kind of a weather vane, I think, into which direction this is moving. And we really don't know yet until that point comes. If he's in the clubhouse grousing every day after practice about why they won't get rid of him, then that's unsustainable. You know, that's going to wear on teammates. That's going to get people frustrated. If he says, hey, I'm ready to put this behind me, let's go win, and they do, then this could potentially go away. The other thing that could happen that no one talks about is they could fire the GM. I mean, Brittick is not there forever. He's not set in stone, and that would be one of the perhaps the easiest ways to sort through this if you were determined to make Nolan Arenado happy and keep him. Will that happen? I don't know. I mean, we have to see what kind of what the reading is on spring training.
We're coming to you from the Lou Fuse Automotive Studios on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, LouFuse.com. Find out more. Great selection there, and also by STLCriminalDefense.com, Henderson and Watercutty. Final question about what I think is really going to be interesting, and people have asked me so much about the cheating scandal with Boston and with Houston, and you just hit on the point. You know, when he gets to Arizona, Arenado, that's when the conversation really gets going because they're accessible to the media. Well, now the entire league will be accessible to the media.
Are you questioning the effectiveness of the gag order?
I am. I'm very curious to see what comes out in the next, well, for certainly all of spring training, but definitely in the next 7 to 10 days.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a more apologetic Astros, and you'll see a lot of people taking the gloves off when it comes to criticizing the Astros. I definitely expect that. The league will not be able to enforce or even keep track of the comments of players who are frustrated by this, and players are frustrated by this. I thought Matt Carpenter gave one of the best answers that I've seen in baseball at winter warm-up when he talked about how he would what kind of a difference it would make to have a hint as to what was coming. And he was, you know, he was willing to even take a shot at himself saying, yeah, I wouldn't have hit so poorly last year if I would have known something like that. Look, there is one of the things that should be put to bed immediately is this notion that there were some players who were doing this who didn't find it effective or that it didn't help them. It's bogus. If you talk to anybody who's done this at a high level, they would absolutely like to know whether the pitch that's about to come is going to be a fastball or a curveball. So I think the players are eager to address this who haven't had a chance yet, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what the Dodgers have to say about it, and the Yankees too, because you better believe the Yankees will have some comments.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. Let's switch gears and talk a little football here because Isaac Bruce, last time we were talking, he was on the cusp of being maybe a Hall of Famer. Well, now we know he's a Hall of Famer. In the big picture of what this means for football in St. Louis, what's your take on it?
I'm happy for Isaac, first and foremost. I'm happy for St. Louis Rams fans who have continued to, you know, try to get Isaac in the conversation. I think you got to give Howard Balzer a tip of the cap because he was in the room presenting Isaac's case. And it's harder to do when you don't have a team to back you in this presentation. So thrilled for Isaac. I really hope that, you know, those Rams fans who are still around, we know they are going to go to Canton and remind the league that they took a team away from a city that cared very much about football when the owner actually cared about winning more than he cared about moving the team. And I know that Isaac will go out of his way to give St. Louis reasons to celebrate. They'll be mentioned in the speech, and he was mentioning them Saturday when I talked to him on the ride to the announcement. He's not a guy who's going to say, you know, look at me. He's never been that. He was very thankful to the people who supported him. He was thankful to his teammates, his coaches. You think about that team, man, all of the Hall of Famers that are already on it now with Isaac, you know, Torrey Holt, I think, is going to get his shot now that Isaac is in his first time as a finalist here this past year. He's got the numbers that suggest he should be able to be in as well. What a cool moment. I mean, it happens at the 20th year anniversary of the Super Bowl win. It happens when the Super Bowl is in Miami, which means Isaac gets to have his family and friends in Fort Lauderdale, which, you know, it was a special moment. And he was frustrated that it took this long, but all that went away when you hear that knock at the door. And just happy for him and happy that he has, you know, continued to have such a good bond with St. Louis. I talked to him. I've talked to him a few times since he's been in. And I asked him at one point along this process, we asked him, I said, what does it mean? When did you know that like you were going to have this relationship with St. Louis? And he actually had a great story about Ozzie Smith and said that, hey, you know, when I was new here, remember he came over as a Los Angeles Ram and he didn't know anything about St. Louis. And but he met Ozzie Smith early on. And he said, man, I saw how people respected Ozzie Smith. I saw how everybody stopped to take a photo with him. And he was, you know, he and Jack Buck were Mr. St. Louis 1 and 2. And he goes, I wanted that. And, you know, I don't think anybody will be Ozzie Smith or Jack Buck. And Isaac wasn't saying he was. But he does feel like he has a relationship now with St. Louis. And he's continuing to try to build that.
The Battle Hawks kick off this weekend. And I think the thing that'll be really interesting, and you were telling me that they're going to be sold out for the home opener, which
I think
is
they will be, yeah.
2 weekends, but the TV ratings. When the TV ratings come out, where is St. Louis? And if they put on a show of people supporting it, it's just another reason that you put in the check mark, you know, put the check mark down in the box of why you stay in St. Louis if you're the NFL. I do think they're going to get great ratings. I really do.
Yeah, well, they got a great TV deal. You're going to be able to watch it on ESPN, which is huge for the XFL. That gives it more staying power than I think some people maybe realize. I think the XFL actually screwed this up. There's no reason that the St. Louis team should be playing its first two games on the road. It makes no sense to me. The St. Louis market is the only market in the XFL that does not have an NFL competitor. Why would you start that team on the road for two games before you bring them home? I don't get that.
Mm-hmm.
That's confusing to me. I think if they were to rethink it now based off the excitement that they've seen, based off the ticket sales they've had, I think they would have done it differently. But, you know, ideally for the Battlehawks' sake, they win the first two games, so there is energy. It would be a bummer if they lost the first two and then it kind of takes the zing out of it when the team comes back. I think people are going to show up just to send that message to the league that you mentioned. I don't know if it has as much to do with could they name 10 Battlehawks? Maybe some of them. I don't think I can. I know they got a good quarterback, apparently Jordan Tomo from Ole Miss, and I'm eager to see what they do. I'll be at the home opener before I head down to spring training to kind of get a feel for it, which I'm looking forward to. I don't know what the staying power is. I do think there is an energy level right now that probably is not mirrored across the league when it comes to the XFL. And part of it is because St. Louis is in this spot now where it's like, if you put it here and you show you care about St. Louis, then we'll show up and support you. That's real.
The league, though, has to come out clean, meaning that the rules need to be understood. And there are some different nuances with this game as opposed to when you're watching college or NFL. But you're going to have bumps in the road. It's a new league. It's just going to happen. But you got to come out somewhat clean, which the first version did not, and it was a disaster. And this one cannot if you're wanting to get fans into the seats.
Yeah, it has to be more polished, and every indication is that it has been. The only thing I think comparable between this XFL and that XFL are the name, which I'm sometimes wonder why they didn't maybe change it. But it does seem like I think you're going to have to teach people the differences. But the things they've rolled out are pretty interesting, like this idea that you're basically, you know, you can stagger your extra point attempts to have a better chance of making up points. They're really embracing betting, which I think is kind of ahead of the curve because, as you and I know, like, a lot of what drives the interest in this stuff is betting. They're just being honest about it. You know, it won't be taboo to hear a broadcaster mention a spread or the fact that the team's about to cover, which I think a lot of people, you know, betting is the next wave, and now all of a sudden these teams are coming around to it, but they're going to be ahead of the curve on that, which I think people will like. If it's live sports and you can bet on it, people will watch it. We've learned this, whether it's a dog race down in Florida or the XFL. So I think there's some juice there. We'll see how they can teach on the fly. We'll see how well coaches and players know the rules. I think those are things that are TBD right now.
Well, speaking of football, Eli Drinkwitz, he winds up getting a pretty good recruiting class, 50th nationally, right around 50th nationally for most recruiting services. He signed 17 recruits. 5 on Wednesday, and he kept 12 of the 17 that Barry Odom had, including one of the big additions that he got, Enos Rackstraw, on a video that went viral with him going nuts that he got him. He was the defensive player of the year in Texas. Your thoughts on what Eli was able to do?
That first signing class is always such a mixed bag when you're a first-year coach because you're kind of trying to keep the previous class together while also not really knowing if you maybe want it. You're trying to address very quickly the needs that you have, determine your short time, and really I think you just try to survive, which made the the landing of Rakestraw so important, because this was a guy who, when you look at just his star total, it's 3-star, and people go, well, why is everybody throwing a balloon party for a 3-star? Is this just social media hype? And I'll say this, sometimes you hear about guys having offers that are not real offers. So when you hear that a guy has an offer from an Alabama, if he shows up to Alabama and says, Coach Saban, I want to commit, Coach Saban might say, who are you again? And no, sorry, we don't have a spot for you. There's a difference between an offer and a committable offer. This young man had legit committable offers from both Texas, his home state school, and also Alabama. I mean, Nick Saban had just visited him, used one of his home visits to check him out. And Barry Odom, to his credit, was one of the first to get on this young man. And Eli Drinkwitz said, hey, we're going to prioritize it. We're going to try to keep him, you know, get him to commit to us, even though the coaching turnover happened, and got named as one of the 3 finalists, and didn't know going into that video if he was going to get him or not. So that emotion, that reaction was real. Now, here's what way it's a good thing. It's a good thing because Eli Drinkwitz got a good player, and that's a good sign for recruiting under Eli Drinkwitz. The other thing it's a good sign for, and we've seen this since he got hired, is he understands how to get his name out there, how to make a splash, how to have an impact in 2020 when it comes to recruiting. The reaction got on the Paul Feinbaum show. It got your guy, you know, your favorite coach, Lane Kiffin, talking about it in his interview with.
Loved it, what Lane had to say.
And Lane loved it. And it's a reason that on a Wednesday, when signing day has really turned into a non-starter of a story, because now there's the early signing period, that Eli Drinkwitz's name is out there. So I like what he's done with the staff, the additions that he's made. He's really prioritized recruiting. You look at Bush Hamden, who came from Washington. You look at Curtis Looper, who came from TCU. You look at what he's saying about not letting these players bleed out of Missouri who can help this team, but also having a strong presence nationally. The guys he's added, I think, could have the chance to give Missouri the best national recruiting it's ever had.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. When you look at the St. Louis Blues, big date is coming up, and that's February 24th. That'll be the trade deadline. Vladimir Tarasenko was on the ice yesterday for the pregame skate in the morning. It looks like he's closer, hopefully, than not. We'll find out. What do you think the Blues do at the trade deadline?
Man, so much of it seems to hinge on how Vladimir Tarasenko checks out in this final appointment and what the Blues get back as feedback. I'm of the mindset where, to me, there's no reason to bring this guy back before the postseason. I don't see the point in it. I think that you give yourself way more flexibility with the cap space if you just wait until the postseason. I don't know what you're going to find out in the games that remain. When you look at a realistic return, which could be, you know, when's the soonest he could be out there and playing again? So if the Blues bring him back during the postseason, then they give themselves that contract's room worth of flexibility in the salary cap. They give themselves more time to find out if a guy like Zach Sanford or Jordan Kyrou or Sammy Blake can discourage Doug Armstrong from going out and adding forward a top 6 forward at the trade deadline. They don't need to add depth. They know they're good there. I think that what I would do is continue to let it play out, and, you know, also off not in game situations, try to get a feel for what Tarasenko is going to be able to do and use that to factor in whether or not you need to add on top of these guys that you have. Or maybe if Sanford continues to play this way, or if Jordan Kyrou breaks through, then you don't need to add. But I don't see any reason of rushing Tarasenko back, not just for this season, but for future seasons. You want this guy to only be out there if he's 100% ready to go.
Pietrangelo, though, has been one of the best players on the ice from day one. Free agent to be. You don't know if you're going to retain him. So to me, that complicates it a little bit. You say, do we go out and improve this club and make one more run at it and sacrifice a little bit of the future, or do we just kind of keep it going the way it is and keep everything status quo, which is what they did last year, and that paid off?
Yeah, that worked out. And I think there is something real about maybe not ruffling the chemistry when it's worked to this point. Now, some of this will depend on how the Blues play up in, until the trade deadline. If they need a kick in the pants, if they feel like they're not getting a true proven person who's ascending to that role, there are some hard decisions that Doug Armstrong has to make. He has made this clear. This is a championship window. We're going to treat it as such. So do it. You know, don't hedge away from it. But I also don't know that trading like a Jordan Kyrou and a first-round draft pick is worth the guy you're going to get as a rental on the fly who may or may not mesh well with the team. I'm not quite sure to say that's going to make you that much more of a Stanley Cup contender either. I get it. The emphasis is on this team and winning a championship with the group that it has. But the Blues didn't win the championship because they made a splash initiative at the trade deadline last year. They made it because they had 20 guys who scored in the postseason. So, you know, using that depth, using the ability to structure the team and find a new guy in every series, sometimes in every game, that might be just as good for their chance to repeat as it is bringing someone else in to a primary role and then saying, hey, you know, find chemistry in the most important part of the season with a guy who hasn't been here all year.
The one thing that, and we'll wrap it up with this, the one team I thought out of the state of Missouri that could make the NCAA tournament, it was SLU. It was going to be a tough road to hoe, but the other night, by losing to Duquesne, it's going to be awfully tough now. They got to beat Dayton on the road. You got to go to VCU. You got Rhode Island. I'm not sure it's going
to
be done.
Well, not only do you have to win those games, you got to not blow a tire somewhere, which now they've blown two against Duquesne. And that's not a bad team, Duquesne. But at home, right before the Dayton game, the rematch on the road, SLU needed to head into that Dayton rematch with now a top 10 Dayton team with a full head of steam. And unfortunately, you know, once again, they just as the hype was starting to get back, they undercut themselves. That was a bad loss, and it was a bad loss because they were at home. It was a bad loss because they've kind of taken the momentum out of what would have been a huge game Saturday with a team that is now, you know, one of the best in the country. So disappointing, and they have made it hard on themselves. They're going to have to probably rely on the A-10 tournament now to polish up that resume, and that's if they win these other games that right now it's not so much can they win a big game, it's can they win the games they're supposed to win.
I don't know if they can. I'm not sure. After what I saw the other night, that and Duquesne is good. Duquesne's much better than what people thought. However, you got to win that game at home, and they didn't do it.
And it's, you know, it's tough because they're close, but their strengths were not there enough to overcome their weaknesses. I mean, they have their brand, and it can win, and it's gonna be a hard fought win. They make it hard on themselves, and when they don't rebound, when they don't defend, when they don't completely dominate the glass, then they don't beat good teams. And we're realizing as this A-10 schedule goes along that Duquesne's both a better team than we thought maybe at the beginning, and they also have SLU's number. They've figured out how to play against them.
Always good to visit with you. I'll be catching up with you next week. I'll be down in Jupiter. You'll be here covering sports in St. Louis, but always fun to do these on these Fridays.
Back to our phone chats next week, and people won't have to look at my face anymore, so I think they're happy about that.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.